put by Mr. Fairley.
Thanks, Provost. This is the first in a series of financial reports which sets out the financial performance of the Council for the year ended 31st of March 2015. I'll cover the financial performance as I present items 22 through 25, but in terms of the financial statements, this report, the statements for the year, there are no really significant or major changes in terms of the layout of the account. In terms of the requirements of the accounting code of practice. One change, however, I draw your attention to was the introduction in the year of a management commentary. And if you do nothing else, I would encourage officers and members to read that part of the document. I appreciate that the rest of the financial statements are somewhat technical in nature. So definitely would encourage you to read through that. It provides an overview of the Council's financial position and the activity through the year and the challenges and the risks that the Council face. In terms of the accounts themselves, these will now be made available for public inspection, and the financial statements audit undertaken by Grant Thornton is already underway and will be reported through audit committee and a set of audited accounts come to Council in the autumn. Today it's really just recommended that Council endorse the report and approve the financial statements for 2014-15. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Bryant.
Thank you, Provost. Yeah, I would like to endorse what Guy said and ask members to read this financial report, and in particular, if you look at page 5, where it shows you the underspend and where there's areas that save money, almost £5 million, which is to be lauded. I'm happy to accept the recommendations.
Councillor Baxter.
Thank you, Provost. It's just a question, really. It didn't occur to me. Somebody actually asked me, and I thought I wasn't quite sure what the implications were. But when we're building new houses, as we were talking about before in Midlothian, we obviously get more council tax, but council tax is only about 20% of our income. Much of the rest comes from Scottish Government grant. So if we have a higher population in Midlothian, is the Scottish Government grant, does that increase? What are the implications of new house building is essentially my question.
There are a number of there's a grant distribution basis which takes the overall sum that Scottish Government determine it will give to local government and divvies it up 32 ways. A number of the indicators that are used in the distribution model are population based, whether pure headcount, number of houses, number of children, number of people over a certain age, etc. So that works through the mechanics of the grant distribution formula, and yes, it does result in an increase. There is, however, an arrangement where there are limits put on growth in any one year so that you don't have very big swings between one authority and another. That tends to impact negatively on Midlothian, so that councils that are declining in size have got some relative protection. And that's funded by councils like our own who are at the growth end of the spectrum. But yeah, we do get more money through the grant system for growth.
Okay. Thank you. Item number 22, financial monitoring, 2014-15, general fund revenue, put by Mr. Fairley.
Thanks again, Provost. This report sets out the performance against budget for 14-15 on the main account, the General Fund Revenue account. This is detailed in Appendix 1 and 2. There was an underspend of the year of approximately £4.7 million. That's a material improvement from the position that was reported to Council at quarter 3 in February. And Section 2.2 of the report sets out the principal matters that have given rise to that variation. We are currently undertaking a review to ascertain the impact of the performance for 14-15, both in the current year's financial year's budget and also the implications for future year's budgets. And when that work's completed, it will be reflected in the quarter one financial monitoring report for 15-16 that will come forward to Council in September, along with the implications feeding through into the financial strategy report that will come to the same Council meeting. Section 2.4 of the report sets out for members the position on reserves. The balance on the general fund reserve, in accordance with the unaudited accounts, is £21.3 million, of which approximately £8.5 million is earmarked for specific purposes. That leaves a general reserve which exceeds what we previously determined as a prudent level, but it does, however, provide a buffer against service pressures, savings targets, and one-off costs associated with change programmes. And in light of the sort of financial environment that we're likely to face over the coming years, I think having a healthy reserves position is a sensible approach. I'm happy to pause at this point if there's any questions in terms of the detail in the appendix in particular, any questions you may have for me or colleagues. Otherwise, Council's requested to consider the recommendations as set out in Section 4 of the report.
Thank you. Councillor Bryant.
Thank you, Provost. Firstly, Gary, I would like to thank the officers in the Finance Department for all the hard work in completing these financial statements and in the allotted time of burning the midnight oil, as I call it. I also welcome the positive strategy and strong financial stewardship, and I welcome your review of the 14-15 and how this will impact on future years' budgets where we have got problems coming down the line. I submit that the Chamber accept the healthy position the Council is in and share my hopes for the future. I would temper this by saying that the Tory budget coming next month will surely bring some pain with certain cuts coming. I would also like to highlight Appendix 2, page 201, under adult social care, where there is an overspend due to sickness absence, and I understand this is being addressed.
Present comments? Okay, thank you. Okay, Councillor Mulligan.
Yeah, thanks, Provost. Provost, I have two or three questions. On page 204, under homeless accommodation, that paragraph just seems to end inexplicably due to phase two of the new social housing programme. Is there something missing for the end of that? Should it perhaps read due to being behind time or delay in the programme? There just seems to be some wording missing there.
Provost, that variation was primarily in relation to the turnover and the new buyer situation and the availability of housing as a consequence of that.
I still know, I still feel there's something missing for the end of that sentence. However, it is quite perturbing to see that we have 88 people in bed and breakfast in this day and age, and you would hope that we would be moving to be doing something about that as soon as we can. Can I take you to the Vogrey Country Park income on page 206? And parking income is not expected to achieve the income target by £10,000. That's 10,000 cars. I'm sorry, I'm at a loss to see how there would be a drop in that kind of visitor numbers to Vogrey Estate. I'm at an absolute loss, or am I misreading this?
There's perhaps two comments I would make to that. The first is that the projected income for Vogrey was perhaps over-optimistic. So rather than a drop in numbers, we've just not achieved the increase that we perhaps hoped. The second thing is in terms of the barrier. We've had historic problems with the barrier, and there have been significant periods where it's not been available. We are addressing that now, and we hope to install a new barrier. So going forward into next year, we would hope to address that problem, and that gap would certainly be significantly closed.
Ricky, on that, could you maybe tell us what the difference in figures are for last year to for this year to the year before? Because I find it strange that we would suddenly put up an estimate that we were going to get an additional 10,000 cars turning up at Volgrove without having some reason. It just seems to be a big drop. If you didn't have that figure there, if you could maybe perhaps fire me what the year beforehand's figures are.
Yeah, I'll provide those figures for you.
Okay. On page 207, the bottom area there, where we're talking about several postage and IT supplies, we seem to have changed supplier and secured better prices, but yet we're still £64,000 over budget. And it's the same with the cost of printer consumables exceeding budget. We were told we're bringing in that new system that we would save money, and instead of that, in quarter four, the targets went up the way rather than down the way, and that's with the new system in place. Is there anybody able to sort of tell us how that can be?
Yeah, in terms of dealing with the printer and IT supplies, we've had a historic budget pressure there, where the cost of supplies has exceeded the budget for a number of years. That perhaps hasn't been absolutely apparent in previous financial monitoring reports. We are still in the process of rolling out the multifunction devices. You've seen them within Midlothian House, I'm sure, but we're still in the process of rolling those out. So we should see the full rollout of that project start to allow us to recover some of that overspend in next financial year. In terms of postage, the Council has again for some time had a pressure on that budget. We're working as part of the Integrated Service Support Review to look at how we can take postage out of the system, how we can use email, and all as part of the move away from a paper-based organisation to a paperless environment. And members have already contributed to one small part of that in terms of the proposals for a new committee management system. So we've got a number of initiatives there which are to avoid us having to send paper out the door at high cost through the Royal Mail and other postage systems. But it continues to be a challenge to just manage that financial pressure.
Professor, the last issue that I have to raise on 211, and it probably brings us back to the procurement and transformation through procurement savings. We have a target in there of £705,000, and it seems that we've actually got £107,000 yet. So effectively, £598,000 hasn't been realised. Is that not the second year in the trot that we've actually failed to realise these savings? And one of the ones that sticks out a mile for me, I'm sorry to say, is again transformation savings and maximising attendance, £155,000. We've not saved one penny. Not one penny the budget was saved in there. I mean, where do we get confidence that these targets are achievable when there's such a low gain for them at all? It's quite disappointing to see targets say £705,000 to be saved, and yet there's only £107,000, and in the maximising attendance there doesn't seem to have been a penny saved at all.
Happy to respond. In terms of the procurement savings, when we brought the financial strategy forward back in December through February, we looked carefully at the procurement savings, and we've realigned the savings over the period of the transformation programme. And it really touches, I suppose, on the point I was making earlier. We're now in third generations of tendering contracts, and it is extremely challenging to get budget savings out of these. What we are able to do is to avoid additional costs, or to actually constrain the inflationary pressures that come through some of the contracts. But it's proved extremely challenging to take real budgetary savings out of that process. And we'll continue to look at making sure that we've got robust figures through the contract delivery plan that are achievable, and highlight whether it's savings to stand still or whether it can actually reduce the budget. In terms of maximising attendance, we set the targets there. What's proved to be challenging through the year has been to actually harvest that that overall saving from individual services budgets, but I've no doubt that some of the underspends that we've seen within services relates to the work that has been going on behind the scenes to improve the application of our absence management policies. It's mainly the harvesting of that and being able to take the money out of service budgets that's proved more challenging. But happy to come back in terms of specific details around where we've seen improvements within absence management within services.
Councillor Pottinger.
In adult social care, on page 201, the residential homes for older people has still got a large overspend on the budget. My question would be, why does this continue after we've had so much review and so much time to address the issues that was being well raised previously in this chamber about this overspend when it was even in quarter two at over the half a million amount? And we will never be able to, and am I right in presuming that we'll never be able to return to the zero kind of budget level that was in that situation, and that the review line is going to indicate, or the full reports are going to indicate, that the baseline will change. And I'm just wondering how much this baseline will actually change within that remit, and if I could be informed a bit more of that decision, and keep informed on the process. Turning over onto page 202 on the gross overspend, I see the community care resource panel has got a major underspend of £439,000. Now, I know this is very much client-led or demand-led with individual packages, and sometimes these care packages can cost up to £100,000 at a time. But is it possible then to readdress the baseline on this, or is this just a blip for this financial report that it's not had such high demands on the costs or any other information you could give on that? And finally, on client income on page 203, towards the bottom of the chart there, contributions from clients towards their care packages are higher than anticipated. Can I ask for a breakdown of that? Because, again, it shows a significant difference in a figure, and I'm just wondering how many persons are involved in this. So it's a numbers thing, not just a money thing. And I'll be able to look at, see what was possibly new charges and what was existing charges, or maybe even if it's been more effective charging, you know, with less, you should always say, arrears and debts and stuff like that, so I can have more information on the client income charges. Thanks.
Provost, the first one is in relation to the costings in residential homes for older people. The costings has been reduced, and there has been some reductions in sickness absence. However, as I've stated previously in the chamber, it is a longer term project, and there are there's considerable work underway. We've done a piece of work around understanding the contributory factors. We're addressing those in terms of the work that's going on within the unit, in terms of staff engagement, the day-to-day management of staff, etc., and we're seeing some changes to that. But there's further work that we need to do in terms of the demands that are made of staff. The other costs that are included in that isn't just sickness absence. There's also costs in there that are to do with the higher dependency levels. We've in one home, we've increased staffing, nighttime staffing above temporarily above our establishment in order to respond to individual residents' needs. So there are some variations in there. What we are doing at the moment is reviewing our staffing structure, our management structure, to make sure that it's fit for purpose, because the reality is the way we're using residential care now is very different from how it was even 3 years ago. The length of stay is much shorter, we're doing much more palliative care, and it's much more intensive support. But There is also, as you rightly pointed out, there is an issue to do with sickness absence being above a level that is acceptable. The other issue that you raised was in relation to the resource panel. There are a number of factors that are outlined there in relation to the change in projections. At quarter two, quarter three, we were projecting an overspend there. There was a series of actions that were taken by managers around the rigour of the decision-making processes. There's also an inherent variability in the panel in that we can have at one point in time, as you rightly say, a number of packages that are very expensive where we've seen a rise in people's needs and we've responded to that and we will then project forward for that for the whole year. But in reality, often what happens is as we get the right support in, that the costs of those packages may then be reduced, and that has happened. This year, again, linked to the introduction of self-directed support, there's been a lot of change, and two of areas of spend, our projections were actually higher in terms of the commitments that than actually what had transpired, and that was really to do with the shift from previous funding to the introduction of self-directed support and some of the projections that were built into the budget around that. I'm sorry, the third...
Client charging.
I'd be very happy to provide more information on that. Part of the one of the things that we've been working on is providing better information to clients at a much earlier stage around the what charging is likely to be, and making sure that our systems are better in terms of providing people with better information, and that's resulted in some improvements in terms of collection. But we'll be very happy to provide a more detailed breakdown around the profile of income from charging.
Councillor Pottinger.
Yes, and if you also could comment on any changes to the baseline budgets, because they too have already mentioned. And I know overall, or I suspect overall, it's not going to make any effect to the social work department budget, but I'm interested in any changes to those two items in baseline budget.
So I'm happy to feed back. I don't have the details with me, but happy to feed back as part of the response.
Thank you. Okay. Right, move on to item 23, General Services Capital Plan 2014-15, final outcome report by Mr. Fairley.
So, Provost, this report sets out the final outcome, as you say, on the General Services Capital Plan. Key points I draw to members' attention. And investment in your asset base for the year was just over £11.5 million. There's a further commitment of £4.7 million of investment which is carried forward and being spent in the current financial year. We've seen a small underspend on the final cost of providing the new Burnbrae Primary School, which has been delivered within budget. And we've to fund that investment, we've secured funding through Scottish Government grant, etc., of nearly £10 million. With £4.2 million of capital receipts transferred into the capital fund. As a consequence, the investment, the borrowing for the year to support that investment was just over £1.4 million, which results in an overall net reduction in our debt, which still remains within the overall cap. There's a paper later in the agenda in terms of the implications of ESA 10, and as a consequence of that, through this report, we're asking members to reinstate the overall debt cap in terms of Council's general fund assets at £114 million. So again, today, I ask Council to consider the recommendations set out in Section 4 of the report.
Thank you. Councillor Bryant.
Thank you, Provost. I'm happy to accept the recommendations, Gary, and happy about the continued investment in our asset base as well. Thank you.
Questions, comments? Okay, thank you. Item number 24, the Housing Revenue Account, Revenue and Capital Final Outturn 2014-15 and the Capital Plan 2015-16, 2017-18. I'll report by Mr. Fairley.
Thanks, Provost. And so turning to the Housing Revenue Account, key points to note. The account saw, as expected, a small underspend of the year, just about £350,000, my apologies. A reserve at the year end of £21.377 million, and as I've touched on in earlier discussions, the majority of that required to fund your existing investment plans in either new build or in the existing asset base. Council invested in its housing stock £11.88 million in the year, and today really I'm just asking Council to note the report.
Councillor Bryant.
Thank you, Provost. I welcome the report, which is broadly on budget, as we continue to carry on investing in our housing stock, which was started by our Labour colleagues here on the left. We are now reaping the benefits with a major reduction in our maintenance bill, so happy to accept the report.
Okay, happy to accept that. Thank you. Item number 25, the Annual Treasury Management Report 2014-15. Final report by Mr. Fairley.
Like you say, Provost, the final report from me at this stage in terms of the financial position. This just sets out our Treasury activity for 14-15. Main points to note are set out in Section 2 of the report, with a detailed Treasury Management Report attached as the appendix. Treasury activity really ensures the effective financing of the investment decisions that Council's made. Buried within the depths of the accounts, we disclose that the value of our asset base, and it's some £500 million of assets, and we have borrowing of around £235 million to fund that. Our Treasury activities undertaken in accordance with the approved Treasury management policies that have been approved by Council, and the borrowing in the year is determined by the capital plans that Council approved. So again, today, Provost, just asking you to note the Treasury Management Annual Report for 14-15.
Councillor Bryant.
Thanks, Provost. Happy to note the report, Gary.
Okay. Number 26 is an open seminar at the Cabinet held on the 26th of May. Okay. Councillor Bennett.
I didn't make the seminar myself because of a pre-engagement, but as regards the parking in Dalkeith, there's been reports in the Dalkeith Advertiser with Colin beat the MSP complaining about parking on double yellow lines. But really, the situation in Dalkeith is that the car parks, which were introduced 2 or 3 years ago, I can't remember the exact date, the shoppers' car parks, which are free for an hour, and if you want another 2 hours, it's £1, they're not getting used. People just aren't using them, and it was working fine. And the problem is that Police Scotland withdrew the traffic wardens out of Dalkeith Town Centre, and people are just parking on double yellow lines, and there's no action taken against them. So the problem isn't the parking facilities in Dalkeith. The problem is that it's not being policed, and there's no traffic wardens available. There's supposed to be one traffic warden for the Hayley Midlothian. I don't know, I've never seen a traffic warden. And it's really, if you take the top of Dickies Bray, the junction there, they're parking right across outside the chip shop, and big lorries can't get turned. And there's nobody doing nothing about it. They're on double yellow lines. Didn't matter, I see the report says we could have made double yellow lines. Some of the comments we said they are blitz on illegal parking in Dalkeith. I can't speak for other areas because I don't know what the situation is there. But certainly, I travel from down the road, and so does a lot of people, to Dalkeith to go to the butchers or to go to the shops. No problem parking whatsoever if you use the car parts that's provided.
Councillor Rosie.
Yeah, I'm going to say I I agree with Alec on the situation. Now I raise it in the Pennycook situation is similar. And I know that I went to get the bus the other day to go up to Bonnevig, and there's two cars in the bus stop, and the buses are queued up at the back. So, and that's in Dalkeith. I have certainly, and Ricky will tell you, I've nipped away about the Pennycook situation, because folk can't get near folk are parking in the high street all day. And I have raised issues about that, and I believe my last email has been passed on to the police, my comments on it and what should happen. And I think you're right, we're putting money into it, therefore we should get something back on that. And even if it was, I reckon the Pennycook one that I can speak on, it would be probably, even if he came once a fortnight, to be honest, and he did the blitz, word got round, then folk would stop parking in his place, they would get round. But at the moment, it seems that they're getting moved about and used by the police for other areas. But yeah, I've got to agree.
Councillor Limley.
Thanks, Provost. I mean, I think we've got to go back to where it all started from, and that was with the creation of Police Scotland. And let's start down the road of where we got to. Supported, may I hasten to add, by the parties around this table at Scottish Government level, and the introduction of Police Scotland brought with it all the fears that was certainly discussed and debated in this chamber, and it's come to light, hasn't it? I mean, at least with the old system of the regional boards of Lothian and Borders Police, this wasn't even on the agenda. And all of a sudden, Police Scotland decided, when they started looking at budgets that we were told would be neutral, all of a sudden Police Scotland look at the budget and say, where can we save money? Not taking into account that where they save money, it was going to fall onto the 32 local authorities to actually find that money in order to create a system. We had a situation, for example, where to set up a proper parking regime with traffic wardens, you actually have to decriminalise that. That takes something like over 2 years to set up. Now, COSLA, on behalf of all the 32 local authorities, went back and asked for a delay to be put in place. That wasn't successful, and this council actually put money in along with Police Scotland to get an extension of a traffic warden in this area for a year in order to try and find a common solution. The difficulty was at that time, although my understanding is that has changed, Transport Scotland were saying quite clearly that if the system that you want to put in place does not either make a profit or is cost neutral, then they won't sign it off. In other words, local authorities can't take that on. The difficulty, and they've changed their position on that, was like, make every effort to get there, which is not great. The difficulty I've got, Provost, with this whole report is that it's a seminar report. And as we all know, seminars don't make recommendations. And I haven't heard anything from the administration about a way forward. Now, funnily enough, we discussed this in a paper at the SESTRAN board on Friday. And I'll tell you, right round the table, those authorities that don't have decriminalised parking, because Edinburgh does and Fife does, those authorities that don't have that, they have the same mayhem in their towns and villages as we have. Now, the other side of that is that the police in this area haven't actually done anything about moving people on. There are people on W lines, there are people at bus stops, there's people parking on corners. And I'd like to know the numbers. I don't know, Ricky, if you have that right now. If you don't, then get it appended to the minutes so that we can all see that. How many vehicles have been moved on by the police since the withdrawal of the traffic warden service throughout Scotland? How many within the middle of the area have been moved on? Because you just need to go out this front door and walk along the road there. Double yellow lines right along there. Parked there every day, vehicles, and nobody doing a thing about it.
You go round the corner there and you see them there. Now, we worked terribly hard, Provost. Dalkeith Business Renewal came to us and said, listen, in order to sustain shops in Dalkeith, can you come up with a system that would help? And as Councillor Bennett's already stated, we came up with that system after a lot of agonising in this council chamber, a system that was endorsed and it was actually working. And there were people actually parking in the car parks using it because you get free parking if you're quick. You get the first hour free, and I think it's, what is it, 50 pence or a pound for the next couple of hours. So you get 3 hours, you could argue, for a pound if you need that time. There's not a car in these car parks nowadays. You just need to go around and have a look at that because they're all parking all over the place. That's not helping businesses. That's not helping. And what it's doing is it's spreading. It's spreading out with the centre of Dalkeith into residential areas in the surrounding part of Dalkeith as well. And I just think, Provost, we need to get something done about it. The difficulty we have is we don't have a recommendation and we don't have a paper, actually, to do anything about it. And I don't know if it's appropriate to actually move a course of action that we ask the officers to bring back a paper by the next council meeting with recommendations to find a way forward. Now, I know that's not going to be easy because it takes time to put something together. But elected members are getting it in the neck all the time. And I'm sure the officers are getting phone calls into their department about the difficulties around Midlothian. We all know it, we all see it in our daily lives, and I just really think something's going to happen. We can't go back to what we had because we ain't got the resources to do it. So we're going to have to find a common way forward, and it may be that the Edinburgh system that's sitting there at the moment may be the opportunity to go the right way. But that's going to take a little bit of time. And meanwhile, I'd like to see what the local police force in this area are doing about the number of abandoned, and I'll call them abandoned cars. They're only abandoned for the day because people then come and pick them up and take them away after to get on with their daily lives. But I really do think it's come to a critical situation where we need to do something about it, Provost.
Mulligan. Yeah, Provost, it is really concerning, and I think 100% agree with the fact that Russell's saying here is that the police just seem to have abandoned this. If we hadn't actually given them the money to bring in a traffic warden, we would have absolutely nothing. But you've got to keep in mind that traffic warden's been pulled away to the schools and areas like that to try and deter discriminate parking in the areas. And Midlothian's got a big wide range to go for one guy to cover. But it is clear that the police just seem to have abandoned this completely. You every day see people parked in bus stops, parked on pavements, parked in double yellow lines, and police cars passing them willy-nilly and nothing happening. And the police's argument that if it's causing an obstruction or that, they'll do something about it. They've still to tell us how many folk they've actually ticketed for causing an obstruction. And I think we do need something done. The problem for me here is for the report for the seminar and for the information for the seminar, unless Ricky corrects me and I'm willing to be corrected, it looks like the only affordable way for us to deal with this is to go around and bringing in privatisation of parking laws and bringing in Edinburgh, or else that we're faced with hundreds of thousands, if not £200,000 bills to try and bring in to decriminalise parking ourselves. I didn't particularly want to see parking wardens that are working for the private sector out here. I would rather see traffic wardens who are clearly not seen as being there for financial gain. I didn't think it'll do this council any good whatsoever in the eyes of the public out there, but something has to give. We can't continue doing the line we are. When you're watching people with buggies, disabled people that can't get on buses because somebody decides just to dump their car at the bus stop to walk 50 feet to a shop, and folks left struggling to get on and off of buses. I genuinely think we need to get something back reasonably quick because this isn't going to be a quick fix, and maybe Ricky can outline the timescale to go down the line, but correct me if I'm wrong, Ricky, I know there are other options there, but certainly for me, for the seminar, for the paper that's here, it looks like the most favoured option is to adopt the Edinburgh approach, which will mean private parking wardens out in Midlothian, something I would have hoped never to have seen.
Yeah, there's two things that I'll comment on. The first is a comment that Councillor Imlay's made, or a question, sorry, and it follows on actually from a question that Councillor Mulligan asked me back at the seminar, and that was the number of times that vehicles have been ticketed within Midlothian, and I have asked that question of Police Scotland, and I have had an apology from the inspector that he's not came back, but he will provide that information, and as soon as I've got it, I will forward it. The second question in terms of options and a report, more than happy to bring forward a report to the next council meeting in August. In terms of the time frame, from the start of a process to actually having some form of parking enforcement in place, Councillor Imrie is absolutely right. Historically, for authorities of similar sizes, that process takes about 2 years. At a seminar I was at with Transport Scotland, there was a suggestion that that perhaps could be brought down to 18 months with a fair wind. So it's between 18 months and 2 years from the start to you actually see enforcement in place.
I'd like to ask what our wonderful Community Safety Board have actually done about this in terms of their relationship with the police at a local level. What kind of questions have been asked? Have the sort of questions that we've asked here today been asked by the Community Safety Board or the police at a local level? Have they asked them how many tickets they've issued? Have they asked them what action they've taken against obstructive vehicles? And if so, what was the reply?
No, the questions haven't been asked to the Community Safety Board.
No?
So, okay, happy to get a report, but Councillor Johnson.
Maybe that's why you should come along, Jim, and find out. And you can contribute and ask these questions.
Councillor Mulligan.
I'm asking what, you know, the role of the Community Safety Board, as you've defined it, should be to quiz the police at a local level and look at issues like that. Yet it's no happening, and I think the reason it's no happening is because you know what the answer would be. It's going out of day with us at the end of the day. Police Scotland have taken that decision, and that's why we're knowing it, because it has no influence whatsoever.
Okay, that was a seminar note anyway, so we'll move on from there. Item number 27. Midlothian Council Grants Transition Fund, a report by Evelyn McHugh.
Provost, this report provides information that was requested by Council on the decision-making process in relation to the allocation of grants under the Transition Fund, which was set up as part of the Council Grants Review. Section 2 sets out the background to the Transition Fund and also sets out the criteria for deciding on grants allocation. Section 3 and 4 provide clarity on the two items that members sought information on. The first in Section 3 was in relation to two applicants where there wasn't a big differential in the scoring, and members wanted a clearer understanding on the differential between the two projects and the decision-making process. Just for clarity, the unsuccessful application, it was not recommended for funding because the organisation did have continuing funding beyond the period that the transition grant was set up for. In fact, it has funding right through till the end of 2015, and it also had significant contracts with the council for the delivery of a range of service, thus the risk around redundancy for staff was not as immediate or as great as the other organisation. And the second area that members sought clarity on was in relation to the increase in the fund. The original fund, 32,000, was set aside, but that was increased by 46,000 from other budgets. And it was just to clarify that this was done under the financial directors of the council, which allows council officials to direct money from one operational budget head to another, but only following the approval of the head of finance and integrated service support. And that was the process in this situation. Members are asked to consider the recommendation in section 6.
Thank you. Councillor Johnson.
Thank you. This report does provide me with assurance on the two concerns raised at the March Council. One was the scoring process of the transition grant, and that's now been clearly explained in terms of the decision process concerning the two lowest scoring organisations. The timing of the end of the current grant was not until December this year, and furthermore, the organisation already receives substantial funding from the Council for its valuable work carried out in their communities. It's also been clarified here that the underspend from Fairer Scotland Fund used to increase the transition fund was appropriately authorised, and it was all explained to Owen when he was here. Thank you very much.
Okay, happy with that report. Thank you. A, Regeneration Capital Grants Fund, report by Mary Smith.
Thank you, Provost. This report informs the Council of an opportunity to bid for funding from the Scottish Government Regeneration Capital Fund. It proposes to give priority to seeking grant funding to support capital investment in an arts theatre complex in the Newton Grange area. The RCGF has been developed in partnership with COSLA and local authorities as an annual budget of £25 million to provide financial support to projects that will help deliver large-scale improvements in deprived areas. The Council is asked to note that we were advised of the bidding on the 2nd of June and the deadline for the bid is the 10th of July. The RCGF's criteria are set out in summary below. Because of the very short timescale, we had previously developed an outline proposal for an arts theatre complex in Newton Grange on a site in close proximity to the National Mining Museum, and it involved a short-life cross-divisional group which met with Creative Scotland. This bid was subsequently unsuccessful. So given the short time frame, we've re-looked at that bid again in order to gain some money, but also it would bring in funding up possibility of other funding from Borders Rail, Tyne-esque leader funding, and the possibility of City Deal. So we're looking to maximise that. The outline business case is set out in 3.1. The risks are we've got very short time to do this piece of work. We had done previous consultation regarding this, and the risks are set out at 3.2. In the recommendations, the Council is recommended to approve the submission for funding and, as far as possible, in relation to top short time frame, engage further with the National Mining Museum and local arts community and instruct the Director of Education and Communities and Economy to progress the financial assurance work outlined in section 3.1. Thank you.
Councillor Constable.
Thank you, Provost. Yes, I welcome this chance to bid for this money. It would be very valuable, I think, in our communities up there for this, if this project could get ahead. So I move the recommendations, especially noting in recommendation 3, that before any formal commitment is made, there will be a report back to the Council.
Councillor Coventry.
Yeah, can I just second Constable? We've got the largest arts festival in the world on our doorstep, and it'd be a fantastic asset if we could make this work. So therefore, I think we should be exploring all possible funding streams and supporting the Council in that endeavour.
OK. Happy with that report. Thank you. Item number 28, review of... I'm sorry, we now move into